Next Chapter Podcasts.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, this is Sally Kate Holmes, Managing Director of Next Chapter Podcasts, here to tell you about a pretty cool new offering from our friends at Apollo Podcasts. You can now find the Play On Podcasts on Apollo Plus, a creator-owned platform where every subscriber helps audio fiction creators such as us. You can listen ad-free, early access to exclusives, behind-the-scenes supercuts, and more on Apollo Plus. On top of all that, 70% of the revenue on Apollo Plus goes directly to creators. Join Apollo Plus through the Apollo Podcasts app or by going to apollopods.com.
Hi, my name is Michael Goodfriend, and I'm the executive producer of the Play On Podcasts at Next Chapter Podcasts.
This is part two of my interview with Lawrence Schrag.
Is there an instrument that speaks louder than the rest in this score?
From Prospero's perspective, the cello. I wrote a theme and had a cellist perform it. His name is Cameron Stone. And I had him perform the thematic material in various permutations. And then I sent it to a sound programmer who then manipulated Cameron's performances. I didn't want it to sound like 16th century. I wanted it to be a contemporary story. So I wanted to bring it forward in the sense of having a different sonic idea for Prospero that hadn't been heard. So the programmer's name is Steve Tavoloni, who took the thematic material and the performances of Cameron and did a lot of sonic manipulation. And that evolved into some of the performances that I would then use to program and write with afterwards. So it was an evolution of how I came up with Prospero's material.
So I'd love to just hear just what Cameron Stone recorded for you, the sort of the raw cello. Can we just listen to a little bit of that?
Of course, of course.
And can we hear how Steve Tavoloni manipulated it, right? You said he kind of manipulates it and distorts it a little bit.
Yeah, so he colors everything, and he to me, he brings it into the 21st century.
Okay, so let's listen to what he did with Cameron's recording. And then this gets woven into the sort of the overall theme for Prospero. Yeah?
Correct. Correct. And it, even within that, I then had cues that were the manipulated sounds of Steve, and I had Cameron play on top of it afterwards.
Oh, let's hear an example of that.
I forgive you. I do. Cold-hearted though you are, the spell dissolves apace, and as morning steals upon the night, melting the darkness so their minds begin to clear.
He's less dark, like he sees an opening. He sees the end of the story on the island, and I wanted him to be more human. So he's less manipulative, and I wanted to have the cello, the natural cello, start to come forward, and then by the end, it's just cello.
So the theme that accompanies Prospero, in a sense, evinces his duality.
Correct.
That's so brilliant. And we listening, we don't know this, obviously. When you watch a film or you listen to something like a podcast, you know, something that's got this level of attention paid to composition, are you hearing these layers? Do you pick up on it when it's not your work?
Sometimes. I mean, there are many composers I'm listening to and go, oh my goodness, I need to steal that. Totally. You know, or they're really good storytellers. What do they just do? And I'll listen back. You know, like, how did they do that? And I'm still stealing all the time.
Yes. I mean, most great artists will say that they steal.
eventually you steal and you use it a couple of times. And by the third time you're using it, it's kind of integrated into your material versus just it's still their material. So it takes a bit of time, but yeah.
What went into the creating of Ariel's music?
So for me, it comes from the island. The island, you know, in theory is somewhere between, you know, Italy and North Africa. So I wanted to have this colors of North Africa. I wanted to use scalar material, a modal material that was coming from a different world than Italy. So to make distinctions of that. So I wanted her to sound a bit more mysterious than someone coming from Naples. I mean, it was really just a coloristic perspective and a scalar perspective. And knowing we had Kuhu, I thought it was just such a unique opportunity because Kuhu's a badass singer that I wanted to write something unique for her. She's just, so it started me thinking about what could I do for her voice and how could we use her voice in the context of the score? How could we take advantage of her being so like multi-talented and wanted to do that and to find a unique way to use it and unique colors and perspectives.
So what informed the decision to place it between Italy and North Africa? What is that just directly from the script?
I mean, I stretched it for sure. But I really wanted to, the idea of it to have a broader sonic palette. And this was an opportunity to open it up.
And you did something that I've just found so, it's so rewarding aurally. This layering technique, can you describe that, how it's used?
It's really just, you know, I heard a bunch of songs for Full Fathom Five. I mean, it's classic Shakespearean material, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to find a way in that felt more contemporary, felt like it's coming from this century. And I hadn't heard a lot of approaches that did. Certainly a bunch have, but I wanted to find a way in that was more, that could play like a song, you know, that could feel like a verse chorus from the, you know, come down to the yellow sands through to Full Fathom Five. I wanted to have that like come down feel like a verse, and then full fathom five feel like a chorus. So I designed it that way. And then I really just was using contemporary pop layering techniques of how to use vocals.
Who does that in contemporary pop?
Who doesn't? Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish.
So many singers, you know, are overlaying themselves on their vocals, and it creates this unique richness that would have the vocals make it have a distinct sound from just her speaking voice. And I wanted to have that distinction.
Let's listen to just one layer, if it's all right with you. I'd like to listen to Kuhu singing Full Fathom Five. And we'll just listen to one of those layers, and then we'll listen. Well, we'll start with the one layer. And now, can we listen to the sort of the final version here with all the layers stacked?
You'll hear it starting, you know, thinner where it might be just two layers to six layers from the beginning to the end, and the whole thing would grow.
Okay, so when you compose the song and you did this layering, it starts out very thin and then continues on as the song gains traction.
Correct. Yeah. And it grows and it grows from there. Yeah. And I wanted it to, you know, by the time we get to Full Fathom Five, for it to have more of a largesse from Come Down, you know, which is more mysterious.
Join Play On Premium to get merch like t-shirts, hoodies, and coffee mugs, ad-free episodes, and bonus content video featuring interviews with the actors, producers, playwrights, and directors who brought it all to life. Go to ncpodcasts.com and subscribe to Play On Premium to support the art and the artists.
It's incredible how music makes people feel emotion, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that, do you think, what really drew you to it?
I think so. I do like being, I love the art and the craft, but there is an emotional component that is very fulfilling, and getting lost in other characters, having the empathy to be part of their lives and to be in their character and to write from their perspective. It's touching for me.
You said that some of the characters have a very different feel. Well, all the characters are distinct, but then there's those characters who are Italian, right? Alonso, King of Naples, and Antonia from Milan. When they're in the podcast, are you creating music that is more of that part of the world, or did you not get that specific?
I was overly specific. I use Neapolitan harmonies that are quite specific, and melodic material that is much more chromatic versus smooth and scalar. From, let's say, Ariel or Prospero, which is broader intervallic leaps, the Italians were more chromatic, darker, harmonically more dense, different instrumentation. I tried to make it as each character as distinct as possible, with different instrumentation, different scalar material, different harmonic material, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So can you tell us her character, like which instruments are most attuned to whom? You know what I mean? Like does Alonzo have a instrument in the same way that sort of Prospero has a cello?
Yes, a lot of the Italians, I didn't do them as individually distinct. I did it more as a collective color. And they had more like not harpsichord, but certain sounds of that era that I manipulated and made more contemporary. Yeah, so it was more of that, and the melodic material was, it didn't have any wide, the D, da, da, da. It was just more chromatic versus bo b, it had having wider intervals. I wanted it to feel a little bit more like they're all kind of, they're in court. They're still in court and they're still arguing. They're still manipulating. They're still like trying to shape things. And it's never a clear intent. Well, actually, one of them did. But, you know, it's just, it felt murkier for me. Oh,
And is it informed by any period in history, the Italian music?
well, the Neapolitan harmony is very much of that era, yeah, that I used, and that was very intentional.
Then there's Caliban.
Yeah,
What is
Caliban, darker, more interesting, unique. Caliban is also, you know, light and dark. And so I didn't want him to have any real melodic material. To me, it was just a texture and an earthiness and a rhythmic quality. Like he could, there's a random quality to him. And I wanted the music to feel a little bit more random and like he didn't quite know where it was going to go, but very dark.
And then there's the lovers. And there's a theme that kind of permeates the lovers, Ferdinand and Miranda. Did you try to bridge the divide between Ireland and Italy or?
A friend of mine was here when I was recording, who's from, he's a student of mine from Italy. And he was listening and goes, "Lawrence, you're an Italian composer." I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "These melodies are very Italian." And I wasn't aware of that, but I wanted to write something heartfelt. And let's just, I've stolen from Morricone all my life. Ennio Morricone, who's one of the great melodic writers. I mean, I was probably influenced by that, not intentionally, but yeah.
It works just beautifully, and it really, we delight in their love because so much. I mean, the music supports that sort of effervescent feeling, or maybe it even makes us feel that. And it just is so. Just as music makes you feel things, it also makes you see colors, right? In different ways. The music that permeates the sort of the lovers' scenes makes me see things more brightly. It feels like their images are brighter, even.
Well, the words are pretty good. The performances were pretty good.
There's
However,
that.
their material was accompanied by some of the sounds I used in the island theme, which I wanted to have this effervescence, this kind of magical quality too, that was sort of this bubbling sound that you didn't quite know what it was, but there were a lot of different string techniques and different coloristic, sounds that were very transparent, but bubbling. For me, the island was, I wanted to create a theme that felt like birds and insects. Like, what does that sound like musically? I used some of those sounds for the love theme because this is, it's a, they're coming together on this island is true magic.
And you worked with the sound designer, Lindsay Jones.
Wonderful.
What was that like? So is that common for a sound designer and a composer to be separate jobs?
Of course, I mean it's done that way in film all the time. You have sound effects editors, you have dialogue editors, you have all of that stuff. However, Lindsay is quite unique that he's also extremely musical and understands music and knows how to use music skillfully. So I'm grateful for that. So he's multi-talented, and it was very helpful for me.
So, but it's a real, I mean, in the same sense that a playwright hands a play over to a director and a cast and just has to hope for the best, and it's such an act of trust, right? You're handing your music over to the sound designer, essentially, right? The sound designer then utilizes it pretty much as they see fit.
So there's a commonality, however. We're both taking direction from Andy.
Okay.
And I know that whatever I give, Andy's going to use in the way he wants. As soon as it leaves the studio, it's no longer my music. It's Andy's music to use as he wants and how he wants to shape the story. And it's always an act of surrender to pass it along, but it's no longer mine at that point. And it took me a couple of decades to surrender to that. And I'm healthier because I have.
I can imagine it must have, well, again, I relate it back to actors who see a performance cut together that they, using takes that they didn't like,
Exactly. You go, oh, I had three better takes in that. Why'd they use that? And it was because someone in the background was moving or whatever it is. It's like it's messed up. But yeah, so it's an act of surrender, and and it's the creative collaboration that we don't have control. And and it's narcissistic to believe that we do.
What do you want people to come away with when they hear this score, when they hear these podcasts?
An appreciation for an amazing story that's told well and directed well and produced well, and hopefully I have. I mean, it's really not about what I want. It's about what the collective has produced, and I think it's kind of remarkable.
Did this feel like working on a film, or did it feel different?
Different and the same. The same in the sense that I'm coming up with thematic material and allowing to, how am I going to tell the story? How am I going to, what are the characters? What are locations? What are all of that material? What is that informing me? And what am I going to write? So that feels very much the same, and the recording process is the same, and but the difference is, it's a hell of a good story. I mean, that's different. It's language that is so rich that it feels different. It feels, this is iconic material, and so it felt different for me. It felt like I'm on hallowed ground, and I had to be very, I had to honor it. And because of that, I was very, I mean, I'm listening to the words different. I'm listening, and also because it's radio or podcast, you write differently for this than you would for film. In the sense that in film, you'd see someone come on screen. Here, I had to be very programmatic, and when so and so was present, I had to create that material and to say who's present. So you have to write differently for that, and you have to be subtle and not hit people on the head, but to inform of what's going on. Because there's no camera. So it's a different art form that I hopefully I did okay. I mean, Andy, I think, was really helpful in terms of where and what's going to happen and what he was wanting for each character. And I thought that it was, it's different and the same. So.
Well, that brings up a question that I wanted to ask you, which is, have you listened? Have you listened to the finished episodes when they've been published? Or yeah. Are you, yeah?
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of, it's very moving. It's great storytelling. It's colorful. There's a lot of depth to the image of the sound, which, you know, Lindsay is clearly involved with, and placing things and hearing things, and the performances are intriguing, and it's kind of amazing to listen to.
Anything that you in particular are proud of in your own work on this?
I thought it was colored well. You know, I thought it had the texture of the location. I thought it had, I was inside the characters enough that we felt them. And I felt proud that I think I found that balance.
It was a gift for you to give your time and talent to us. Can't tell you how much it means to.
No, it was a privilege to work on this material. It's when someone says Shakespeare, the next word should be yes.
Well, thank you again, Lawrence Schrag. You have just done a masterful job here, and it's our honor to have been able to work with you.
Yeah, back at you. It's just been a privilege to do something like this. I didn't expect this kind of material to fall in my lap at this point in my life. And I'm glad it didn't happen earlier, because I don't think I would have been musically ready.
You've been listening to the Play On Podcast bonus content series. You can learn more about the Play On Podcast at Next Chapter Podcast's website, ncpodcasts.com. That's N as in next, C as in chapter, podcasts with an S at the end, .com, where you can find other Play On Podcast series and interviews, along with talk podcasts like The 500, The 10, Beef with Bridget Todd, and a whole lot more. I'd like to thank Jeremiah Tittle, the founder of Next Chapter Podcasts, and my producer, Pete Musto. Our audio engineer and editor is Justin Cortez. Be sure to subscribe to Next Chapter Podcast for updates on all the latest content, and don't forget to rate and review our shows. I'm Michael Goodfriend, and I look forward to sharing more incredible works in the Play On Podcast series with you, along with lots of enlightening bonus content at Next Chapter Podcasts.
Next Chapter Podcasts.